and welcome to another exciting episode of the Co-Opticast. This is episode 81, February 15th, 2012. I'm your host for this one, Jason Love. And joining me are three guys I met in the TGI Fridays bar. That starts off with...
This is Locke.
Oh, hey, this is Nick.
And in the third seat we have... Oh, that's right. Yeah, Mike couldn't join us this time, so all you faithful listeners out there, I'm sure you're very disappointed. He is tending to other things at the moment, so won't be able to join us for this week, but he'll be back soon enough. As usual, we'll get things started with what you've been playing, and so Locke, get us started. What have you been playing?
A couple things for review. First thing I'll get out of the way, because I don't have much to say about it yet, is Shank 2. Playing that on the Xbox 360, and it is more Shank, surprisingly enough.
Is it more really or less Shank than in a prison?
More Shank than in the prison, but no, I really enjoyed the first one. I thought the art style was really cool. I like the over the top gore, that caters to me, and the what they did with Shank 2 is again continuation of the storyline. Gave your guy a couple extra weapons, guns, and moves. And again, I'm really going to focus on the survival mode that they included. So you and another player fighting off hordes and waves of enemies, which I'm pretty stoked about. I've only been able to play it once. I haven't got too far in it, but looking forward to getting more of that done tonight and tomorrow because review goes up on Friday.
Andrew's
so far
a
so
cruel
good.
Taskmaster.
Yeah, he's whipping me into shape. I can't goof around on Dark Souls anymore this week. So, I like it. It's available XBLA and PC. Is it on PSN? I can't remember.
Yeah, it's on PSN. So. Yeah,
yeah, PSN as well. So
about how I know you said you haven't played much, but about how far do you think you've gotten in it so far?
The first chapter, basically. Exactly. So not too far, but slamming through it, all nighters. Ho.
I've read a couple things online. I'll be curious to see, too. There's a few things I've heard here and there that towards the end it gets pretty buggy, like almost to the point of being unplayable.
I've tried to stay away from stuff just because I like to be as objective as possible, but I have heard some frame rate issues, which is weird with a game of that style when it's all hand-drawn and like that. Those types of games, you're not pushing tons of, polygons, so... Yeah. We'll see. I'll let you guys know. The other thing that I have been playing, which has been taking most of my time, it kind of took over Sunday for me. I got up, and it's King Arthur, the role-playing war game 2. What a great title. I basically booked off Sunday to play this game because I knew I was going to be busy this week, but I've been able to play it, sprinkled here. But yeah, I started at 9 in the morning and it was one of those games where you're like, oh, it's 6 at night, so I guess I should brush my teeth or something. I don't know. Like, I look down, I'm sitting in sweatpants and
but, your wife might
but
appreciate
I was,
that. Maybe not. Who knows?
I don't know. But you know what? I was saving, the land with my knights and my wizards. And I'll break it down for those people who haven't played King Arthur, the role-playing war game. I played the first one a little bit. I wasn't too impressed with it. Basically, think of the Total War series mixed with a more involved overview system where you do quests and you level up and have all the RPG stuff takes place on the overworld screen, which is it's not a risk board. You actually have a character that you move throughout the land, and they have turns going throughout the land. So if you think like Heroes or something like that, you have a certain amount of moves per season. And so one season you go and attack, say, the Picts in the north, and the next season you go and you discover, Merlin over in the south, and it's got awesome writing. And one of the first things I noticed about the game was that every single quest is narrated, and it's narrated really well. And that definitely gets you immersed in sort of the whole, you know, wizards, warriors, and King Arthur theme. But the game really falls apart. Not really falls apart, but it doesn't do a great job in the battles. So once you do move your character and you go and you fight a guy, say you're trying to take over his duchy or his, you know, you're fighting the evil count to take over his duchy, but and it goes into a battle screen. Yeah, exactly. No, that's exactly what it's like while you're playing this.
Do you glove slap him? You're like, I challenge you to a duel.
No, it's all about swords. It's all about swords and spells and stuff. And but yeah, once you get into the battle, the polish, you know, there's not a lot of polish there. Your guys, your armies charge at each other. You know, you do the tactics thing, yada yada yada. But when you get down into the nitty gritty of it, and you have two armies fighting, they just kind of like ram into each other. Like, it's bad.
It's two boulders, like, and whichever boulder is bigger wins, right?
No, no kidding. Like, I'm used to play. Like, I've played all the Total War series, and I love that. I know that this isn't it, but I have to compare it to that because that's the battle yeah. system that they're yeah. using. But when you go in and you're like, your cavalry charges in on a bunch of archers because you made this wicked flank, and all they do is just kind of bump into them, and then you can see the numbers ticking down. It's like, I guess I'm winning because the archer number is going down, and it loses a little bit of the, you know.
That's a shame.
Yeah, because, so, I feel bad saying it, but I've actually started just doing auto battle for everything. Yeah. And playing, and which is like half of the game, but I really, really like the overworld stuff because you're playing an RPG, yeah. and it's got really involved quests. And some of the quests are, some of the quests don't even have a battle related to them. You'll go and you'll have to resolve some political debate, and you'll get faction, you know, you get plus 10 to this faction in the north, minus 10 to this, depending on what choices you make. And sometimes you'll come out with artifacts and gold, and it's all just text-based, and I really like that.
So it's a role-playing game with RTS elements and a public debate forum?
Yeah, totally. No, it is, because you'll go and you're like, a bunch of quests will pop up on your screen, and you can decide which ones to hit up. And the aim of the, because it's got a full campaign, and then you got the skirmishes, and I don't think it has multiplayer in it. I'll have to double-check. It might. But yeah, I played like most of the campaign, and yeah, like some of the quests are just go talk to this dude and resolve, you know, the plague that has hit their land. And depending on the choices you make, you'll get like plus 10 gold here. Or if you like are an ass and you're like, I don't care about that province, let it die, you'll get minus 10 to that faction. And then that goes into how you want to sort of conquer the area. Cause the objective is obviously to take over the whole kingdom. But if you're not friends with, you know, if you're not friends with that one province in the north, they're not going to want to join you. So you're going to have to take them over by brute force. Whereas maybe you were like paying off guys in the south. Yeah, sure. They'll become your allies. So it's a really involved overworld overview, much more so than the Total War series. So it has a leg up on that. But once you get into the battles, it kind of breaks down and it's not too fun. You can use spells and there's like different tactical points in the battles, but I've chose to ignore them after playing about, you know, a couple hours of them just because they don't feel good. They don't really feel good, which is a shame because there is a lot of attention to detail. Like I said, especially with that narrator in that overview overworld. So yeah. It's really cool. I'm gonna keep playing and see what happens. You know, you can give different artifacts and say take one of your heroes and make, you know, marry him off to, you know, one of the other factions. And It's really cool. I think it's around $40. I'll throw in my thoughts in the review, but I'll drop a hint here. Probably can wait for a sale on that one if you're a fan. Like this is for fans of people who like those strategy sort of war games, like the Total War series. It is a nice diversion from that. But if you're looking for a great, you know, battle simulator,
yeah,
this is not it. This is absolutely not it. So
we need to toss a review spoiler up on this one.
That's right. But that'll be out. I'm thinking Monday. Get that one cranked out.
Cool.
For Beyond Co-op. And the last thing I've been playing for all week. This has taken over my work day. don't tell my boss, no, is Hero Academy. It's by Robot Entertainment, same guys who did Orcs Must Die. And it is it's a turn-based strategy game on iOS. And it's really cool. If you think of it as battle chess with random pieces and power-ups and equipment, that's what it breaks down to. You have two factions on a small, tile set board. It's tile-based. And you spawn in your guys, and there's two factions that you can get. The game's free, by the way, which is awesome. And it comes with the human faction. I think they're called the Council. And then if you want to get the Dark Elves faction, you got to pay $1.99, which is fine.
That's where they always get you, isn't it? Oh, yeah, but it's free, but if you want to play, you got to cough up.
And it's well worth the $1.99 for that faction, because it also gets rid of the annoying ads, which are just everywhere. So I happily gave them my toonie. That's $2 for all you Americans out there.
I learned something new.
So you gave them a toonie and not a loony, huh?
It's speaking Canadian with a lot.
Two loonies, that's right. And you can have it's one of the best asynchronous multiplayer games where I take a turn, then you take a turn, and you can just play it throughout the day, which is great. And it'll just give you a notification saying, it's your turn now, and you have, you put your guys on the field, and you have six actions per turn, and an action is moving, attacking, equipping, or casting a spell. That's it. And the object of the game is to destroy the other guy's crystal, and tons of strategy there's a lot of strategy packed into this little board, so I'm super impressed with it. It's called Hero Academy by Robot Entertainment.
And it's got their art style, right?
It's so classic. Like, super cartoony, lots of emotion, and lots of, like, it's pretty humorous. When you win a battle or, like, defeat a guy, the other team will, like, stamp their feet on the ground or, like, throw their arms up and stuff like that. Or when, like, a guy dies, he'll, like, hold his chest and just be like, ugh! It's really well done, and I highly recommend it. And you have no excuse but to download it, because it's free. And you can play the whole game free. And, you know, I only spent the $2 because I wanted to get rid of the ads. And I wanted to play it as the new race, because I got sick of playing as just the humans. So,
and you wanted to say Toonie on the podcast.
That's right. And I want to and I really like Robot Entertainment. I like supporting those guys.
Yeah.
They have humans, dark elves, and they just announced today that a dwarf... Dwarven faction is coming on the 22nd.
How much is that going to cost you?
Probably another $2. Unless, I don't know, but we'll see. It doesn't matter to me. I'll gladly give them my money, just because I've already played, you know, if you want to time it out, I'd say like 6 hours a day, but that's taking a turn, you know, every hour. So, loving that. Loving that. Absolutely loving that.
Cool. Nick, what have you been playing?
So I was digging deep in the backlog lately, and I had to finish up Deus Ex, Human Revolution. I had played that around release, and then I got frustrated at one of the bosses.
Didn't you get frustrated, like, the very first boss? Wasn't it,
I think it was the first or the second one. And what was funny is I picked it up around Christmas time again, and tried to beat him again, and I couldn't. I tried, like, you know, I don't know, half a dozen times, and I was like, you know what, screw this. So I picked it up again, and this was during when I was actually really sick this week, and I was like, I guess I'll try and see what happens, and I beat him the first freaking try.
Really?
Which was like, it blew my mind, because I hardly remembered the controls. I was just like trying to figure stuff out. I'm just running around, and I don't know. I beat him first try.
Illness That's gives awesome. You power. The African virus is like your spider bite.
So I went through and I played through that, and that was a pretty solid game.
Nice.
I also picked up a game called Scorgasm on Steam.
Yeah, I saw you got that on Steam. How is it?
It's pretty solid. So, you know, I'm making a twin stick shooter, so basically any twin stick shooter I see out there I've been picking up and trying to steal ideas from and compare.
Can you put the word gasm in your title now?
I don't think it'll fit, but...
Shargasm?
Yeah. I like it. We're changing the title. It kind of reminds me a bit of Mutant Storm, if you played the Xbox Live Arcade game Mutant Storm. Except it's a little more over the top. It's a little more fast paced, and it has this, they call it melee attacks, but basically the right bumper does like a close range attack on guys. So if you get surrounded, you can kind of like defend yourself. But what's interesting is it builds the scoring into you use that to eat up the bullets that are being shot at you. And so if you do that in quick succession and then also kill a bunch of guys, your multiplier goes up, and it kind of builds on that whole thing.
You're a ship, right? Going around,
yeah,
kind of like
your ship. It's a fixed small area.
Yeah, like Geometry Wars.
Yeah, even smaller. Like I said, it's almost like there was one on PSN too.
Shatter?
You played as like a molecule. It was like it was a molecule one.
What was that called?
Yeah, but it's kind of like that. It's that smaller area. You're really confined, and a set number of guys and waves. But you know, long story short, it's got some potential. It says it's like an open world thing, but basically what it does is you're playing on like a grid. So you play a level, you get it, and you get choices. You go up, right, down, or left, and that's different difficulties. And you just keep going around and solving the levels that way. I've only played probably 45 minutes or an hour of it, but the mechanics of it are real solid, and you know, I'm enjoying it. I'm a sucker for twin stick shooters. So.
I think it's like $10, so it's pretty easy
to
swallow.
It was on sale too. I think it was 20% off. So, and I got it with the soundtrack. I'm a sucker for soundtracks too.
Those ones usually have really good ambient beats and stuff that you can play along to.
It does. It has a lot of good music so far. So
yeah, good week for soundtracks because they got the indie music bundle out now.
I snagged that.
And then second one, So what you got to do, Nick, is take the music, you know, take every best track from each twin stick shooter and then put it in reverse and then put that into your game.
Yeah.
And then you're ready to go.
Actually, the music in my game is something I'm most proud of, and it's the thing I actually spent the most money on. Got a composer
and
everything.
Yeah, Piano Cat is expensive these days. So.
You ruined the surprise lock.
Oh, sorry.
But still going to the backlog, I went back into Lord of the Rings, War in the North, which I only started playing. We had a co-op night, I think, like a month ago or so.
Yeah.
So I started playing it then, but now I went back into it. It's pretty solid. It's got a ton of loot in it. Like, there's almost too much, you know.
And that's got to be, because you're playing on the 360, aren't you?
Yeah.
That's got to be hard to manage with a controller.
They did not, you know, the interface is pretty decent, and it did a good job for you to, like, compare stuff, you know, and see if it's better or worse than what you have. But, like, the problem is, like, you go into a battle, and you come out, and you got, like, 9, like, shoulder pads to choose from, and you're like, you know, and each one is, like, a point different. It does this and that, and I don't know. It's pretty decent, and, you know, another thing I did while I was sick was watch all the Blu-rays, the extended editions.
So yeah, you psyched?
It kind of got me in the mood, so going in and playing it again.
Are you playing that co-op? Or just solo?
I played a little bit co-op. I left it open a couple times, but I've basically just been going solo because I've only been able to have time to play like in 30-minute stints.
Right,
to piss someone off because I'm only in a game for 30 minutes.
No, that's fine. And what are you playing as? Or when you're playing solo, can you switch?
Yeah, you can switch the characters if you want. I'm playing mostly as the dwarf.
I knew it. I just had this image in my head of like an ill Nick sitting there like in his sweatpants getting all excited and be like, "You have my axe." Exactly. Right there.
And my beard.
So, yeah, I don't know. I like the dwarf characters. But yeah, you can switch between them at the end of the levels. It asks you if you want to switch characters. The AI does a pretty good job. They'll even like if they pick up items that are for your character, they'll even send them to you. They'll gift them to you and stuff like that.
Cool.
They'll auto equip and you can mess around with it. So,
yeah, that's on the to get list for sure. Because I remember playing that back at PAX, and then I just haven't got a chance to get around to it.
I've been looking. I've been watching the prices because I have a friend that wanted to pick it up, and it's been hovering around $30 on Amazon.
That's not bad.
It's pretty decent.
So like 80 here.
Yeah, Indian toonies, 80 toonies. Yeah.
Yeah, 40 toonies, that'll cost you. Let me get out my coin sack for you. Jeez.
So that's about it, though.
Nice.
Just still programming away on XNA.
You nerd.
Yeah, I am.
No, that's good. Am I allowed to talk about your game? It's
sure.
fun.
Yeah, we can talk about it.
I don't know. I played that build you sent me, and it's cool, man.
It's getting there.
You know, definitely, it's, you know, of course, it's an early build and needs polish, but it's
like
cool.
A lot of the stuff we're kind of concentrating on, like, there's literally almost no AI at this point.
Right,
just,
yeah.
Like,
yeah, the AI is go after one ship.
Yeah, there's three decisions. It's like, do I attack this guy? Do I attack the generator? Or, you know, do I go over here for a little bit? Like, that's basically the AI, but... We've been doing like a lot of balance stuff, and like I've been doing like progressive difficulty and like power behind like each level and stuff like that. So it's the first four levels are pretty polished at this point now, and pretty playable. So we'll see.
Have you got it fixed yet? So that, you know, I can't cheese my way through like 20 swarms of guys with my shields up the whole time.
Yes and no. The thing is, the levels have a lot more guys now, so. And you're, yeah, the salvage burns through a lot faster.
Okay.
Very cool.
That's that balance tweak.
Yeah, I've probably played, you know, it's interesting because I've played it as much as I've worked on it, which is difficult.
Countless hours.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Oh, no, that's what goes, it's interesting to actually know someone who is actively working on a game just because... You know, you always hear about, oh, you know, they're working on a game. They're tinkering away.
By the time we're done with this,
I keep
meaning
to do, like, more, like, development blog kind of things and talk about, like, what's been going on in my head. But
don't do that, Nick. None of us are ready for that.
Yeah, the world's not ready for what's in my head. But
by the time he's all done, he'll be, like, 20 pounds thinner. He'll just be this gaunt shell, air patches falling out.
So you can get my game on Xbox 720 indie games. It's $1. So,
you know, it's bad though. So, like, I've been looking through a lot of threads on the forums there and stuff, and there's ones that the guys list their sales numbers and stuff. And this one guy, he felt real bad for. He's like, you know, I put it out. He's like, I had, you know, 850 trials the first day and one purchase. And then he's like, my first week, it was like 8,000 trials and 7 purchases or something. Like, it was like really hard. He's like, I'm trying not to put the gun in my mouth.
Well, that,
you know?
That's because he didn't actively market his game with development blogs. That's where you
maybe,
go.
But
you gotta plant that bug early.
It's definitely tough to judge, like, how well it'll do. Like, some of the games are... They have crazy conversion rates of like 50%, you know, and they're selling literally 20,000-30,000 copies. And then there's other ones they're like 5% and selling maybe 2,000 or 3,000 copies. So,
well, you're pretty well connected. Pull a couple strings when that happens.
Yeah. Well,
go from
okay.
There,
here, I guess I could probably talk about it.
Do you know who I am? I'm BA Penguin. Buy my game.
So, Jason, you played. The Elf game, right? The Elf Squad. Right?
Yeah.
Which was developed by one of the Stardock developers, so they actually marketed through it. You know, and it got pretty decent coverage.
Yeah.
Sales numbers in the hundreds for that game.
Oh, I do not doubt it. Do not doubt it.
And, you know, he had said basically what he thought was, you know, it's a seasonal game, kind of like, you know, that's probably a big part of it, stuff like that.
Yeah, it was Christmas themed,
seasonal, and very. So, I mean, for a lot of those indie games, I don't know. I mean, just what I've noticed from playing a bunch of them is there's a real kind of balance for the tone and for the gameplay difficulty. And while Elf Squad, for instance, had like a few different difficulty levels that you could go to, it was the same thing every single level, and that just, I mean, you know. You go through a seasonal game, you play through it once, you play through it with maybe, you know, your family or friends.
Yeah.
But that's it. And on those trials, you get enough of a picture from the trial that you're like, ah, that was fun for a few minutes. Okay, moving on. So.
Well, that's a big discussion on there is, you know, how do you do your trial? Like, what's the good way? Do you know, where do you cut it off as demo thing? And it's really, really interesting because you don't have this big publisher trying to govern a hand of how this game is. You have like one guy or two guys talking about, you know, I've done 4 or 5 games and I did this and this and this and this one to see which would be better. Like, you know, there's people that are making a living doing the indie games, but they churn through, they do like one a month.
Yeah.
You know, that's crazy. They've got their process down, and so it's interesting, but you know, alright, we dwelt on that enough. Jason, tell us what you're playing.
So, I've been almost nonstop in Kingdoms of Amalur Reckoning. It's, you know, to borrow off of the last co-opticast, Kingdoms of Amalur Reckoning is my Skyrim. So if Skyrim is Mike's Dark Souls through transitive properties, this is my Dark Souls.
Oh, man.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. Okay, I'm picking up what you're putting down.
That's right. That's right. Because I got some more, so you better be ready.
Okay, bring it. All right,
here we go.
Tell me about glaives and shit.
I will. Actually, they're called Feyblades.
Oh, fuck. Oh, my goodness. Sorry. I'm already getting schooled.
I was trying to get through that with a straight face. Just couldn't do it. It's good. So, I mean, I'll put up, like, the full Beyond Co-op review in our community blogs about it, but... you know, they tossed together this whole sort of superstar team of R.A. Salvatore and Todd McFarlane to do the artwork, and then Ken Rawlson from, he used to be from Bethesda, to do, like, the whole gameplay. And it, you know, a large part of it feels like the Bethesda scroll games and you know, the Elder Scroll games, because it's a huge open world. I mean, Nick was asking me, so how much have you gotten done? I'm probably about 25 hours into it, and I've done 18-19 side quests and maybe 3 of the main quests. So, I mean, there's a ton of things to do, and I'm hardly even out of, like, the opening starting area, too. I mean, like, there's... You look at the world map, and I'm sitting there thinking, I've gone to 4 out of the 20 areas so far. Like...
That's crazy.
Yeah, I just... I don't even know what I'm going to do with it, but,
I have a prediction. You're going to get sick of the side quests.
Very fast.
What do you have to do? What do you have to do in them? Do you go kill stuff? Do you go collect stuff? Is it typical RPG?
It is very typical RPG, but it's also kind of MMO elements. So some of the side quests are just straight fetch quests of, hey, run over here and, you know, gather up some herbs for me and bring them back.
Great. Awesome. Gather 6 cat teeth. Yes.
That's right. most of them are kind of have their own little story base. So the one I just wrapped up tonight, there's faction quests. And so the big sort of world that it's set in is there's mortals and then there's the fae fairies. And the fae fairies are immortal. So you can kill them, but then they come back to life basically. And mortals don't have that same luxury. They just, you know.
Oh. Okay.
So you can do some of these faction quests kind of along the way, and one of the faction quests I just wrapped up was for the summer fae. They're divided into winter and summer, and it was a really good quest line because it's all about sort of how they tell their history through stories. So you reenact these stories as you do the quest line. So it was an interesting kind of little way to implement these, and you know, it's still the same RPG trappings of run over here, kill some dude, but the story behind it was a little bit more that kept you going and stringing you along to the next one. And that's, you know, again, you talked about King Arthur 2, it's 9 a.m. and all of a sudden, oh, it's 6 p.m. I should probably brush my teeth or do something.
put some pants on.
But it's the same. I mean, it's with this is you start on some of these side quests, and it's just like, okay, well, just I'll just go over here next and just see what they. Okay, I'm just gonna go over here next, and then I'm sure it'll be okay. Well, now I'm just gonna go over here, and they make it so easy because from the get go, you can fast travel anywhere. Like you bring up the world map, and you can just fast travel to any location that you've discovered. So you don't have to wait for some magical point or anything like that. It's, you know, you discover a location, you can fast travel to there. The biggest gripe about the game is, essentially, I mean, they don't do the standard sort of Western RPG of you sit there with sword and shield or whatever and, you know, parry block in the first-person style. It's very much an action, sort of combat, which is good, but it's just that bit off. I mean, I know, like, for a lot of reviews I've read, for instance, like, Dark Souls is, you know, criticisms and... like of it is that you have to sort of be dodging or blocking a little bit, you know, before the enemy attacks. So you have to do that, some of that anticipation.
Yeah.
So it's got a little bit of that, which, you know, I'm fine with, but it's the attacks themselves and your special abilities. So like on the PS3, you hold down the R1 and you have a little special abilities wheel that pops up so you can do magic or whatever the case may be. well, you bring up R1 and you're trying to fire something off real quick, but it just does your normal attack because there's just that little bit of a delay between it registering you have the R1 held and enabling that special ability. So their whole combo chain system starts falling apart when you really need it to be working because, you know, you're surrounded by a bunch of enemies and so you got one juggled and you want to, you know, turn your attention to the guy behind you, but it just doesn't quite move fast enough. So my biggest comment on it, it's a really good game. It'd be a great game with a patch. I mean, like, I feel like it's one of those cases they could tweak some of the stuff in a patch, make it a lot better. Small things, I mean, like with their inventory, it's not quite so bad that you know, you get out of a battle and you have like 20 shoulder pads, but you have, you know, a lot of loot that drops around you and that you find in chests. And they have a nice little thing where you can just, you know, go through and you can quickly send it to a junk list so that when you show up to a vendor, you just say, sell everything in my junk pile.
Nice.
But they need to make it navigating through the inventory a little bit better because right now you're just doing, like, single scrolling down. And when you start stacking up all those items, you know, you need to have, like, a page scroll or something like that to jump to it. So,
right. Now, with all the side quests and you're 25 hours in and not that far into the game, it sounds like, do you think it loses some focus in being that expansive? Or is that part of the charm, like, I guess Skyrim, where you're like, oh shit, I'll just travel over here and wander off and see what I find?
Yeah, I mean, it falls more into that of with Skyrim and a lot of the other Western RPGs is, I'm just going to wander over here and see what's up, and I see it, you know. It follows kind of like the same with the World of Warcraft. So, like, on your minimap, you can see yellow exclamation marks for where there's, you know, quest givers. So you're just like, oh, there's a quest giver. I wonder what they're up to. So you just kind of wander over there and you see what's going on. And 5-10 hours later, you eventually start wandering back to the main quest line. but, you know, it does have that little bit of lack of focus, you know, as a lot of Western RPGs do in that sense. And I would say that if it weren't for some of the way that they tell the story and they kind of get you involved with those side quests, yeah, I mean, you're right. I'd probably burn out of the side quests pretty quick, but they've done a pretty good job of building up that world that I kind of care a little bit more about the world right now than I do about the main quest line and, you know, what my character is doing. And the other interesting thing is they actually reward you. I mean, aside from just, you know, experience and all that stuff, they actually reward you for some of those things. So when I wrapped up that faction quest, I got, you know, what they're called, Twists of Fate, and they're these permanent ability boosts. So, you know, when you complete certain quest lines, and depending on how you complete them, because they sort of let you choose, you get new abilities, or you get, you know, enhancements to your already active abilities and stuff like that, which is a great way to kind of, I think, keep it interesting and keep you going on a lot of those side quests. So,
Now, what would make you play this over Skyrim and Dark Souls? What is it doing differently? Like, why? Like, why should I care about this game?
I think it's, I mean, despite the fact that it's the, that it needs that tweak, it's the action. Like, the way that the combat plays out, it feels really good. I mean, when you do kind of get it down and it's working the way it's supposed to, it's a lot of fun. I mean, you get into a combat and you just start, you know, you go through and you do a combo and one guy... Like, my guy's a rogue / spellcaster, so I'll combo one guy, toss something on him that, you know, sort of sets him on fire, and I'll go then start attacking another guy, and then I can trigger that fire to explode the enemy and damage enemies around him. So it's, you know, I do a combo, set him up, teleport over here, start attacking another guy. When that enemy I was attacking gets close enough to another group, I detonate him. He does damage to all the enemies around him, and then I can start, you know, attacking the other thing. So they do... Those little things they do, you know, when it works, when it, you know, doesn't have those delays, it's a lot of fun. And that's just it. It's like, if they tweak that, if they fix that, it'd be a really great game to play.
Yeah, that sounds like a patch fix for the that delay in action would really, you know, kind of solidify it. Because by the sounds of it, yeah, it sounds like some pretty good advanced combat, you know. A little bit better than Darksiders and not as janky as, say, Dark Souls, but, or not janky, but, I don't know. Have you played Dark Souls? You know how it is, right?
Yeah. And it's, I mean, and that's just it, is like with their dodging and parrying system, it's the same kind of deal. Is you kind of, you gotta be a little bit anticipatory. You can't react when you see the enemy attacking you. You kind of be like, okay, they have like a little bit of a build up, and that's when you move.
Right.
So, yeah. Oh. But it's good. And the other thing is they have story stones. They're called lore stones. And they also reward you for finding those. So when you find all in a set, they give you, you know, boosts from finding those. So, you know, they'll increase your damage with certain weapons or against certain enemies. So they kind of, you know, reward you in that way, too. They do quite a bit to kind of keep you going through it.
Nice.
So.
Nice.
All right. So, talked a lot about what we've been playing. Let's talk about some of what's in the news this week. Starting off with probably what's, you know, anticipated game of the year for a few folks. Borderlands 2 came out this week with an interview with their developer talking about what they're looking at for the next one in the game. Some interesting stuff from that was they're going to increase basically their online co-op capabilities by allowing you to do split screen and online at the same time, something I know, you know, our audience is always a fan of. I thought what was interesting in the interview, though, was the way the producer, the designer there, kind of handled some of those questions about asking, you know, well, what about the loot or XP, or are you going to do anything co-op focused? And, you know, to their understandable, they said, well, no. I mean, you know, this game has to be played single player 100%, so we can't have any sort of, hey, come over here and lift this rock for me while I, you know, do
shoot this
else.
Dude in the face, yeah.
But at the same time, I mean, you know, there's plenty of games where they do have those elements that, you know, it's secret areas. It's like more to kind of be able to do with a buddy that I would think would be good for them to do. I don't know. What do you guys think?
You know, Borderlands is a game that is way more fun with friends. Like, it is infinitely more fun. And I totally understand that you got to be able to play through it single player. But even, you know, its strength doesn't come from co-op specific tasks. I think its strength comes from the difficulty and, you know, having players that act different roles and just the sheer amount of guys coming at you. You need more people because it scales up with each player and, you know, if they threw in stuff in that world, like, yeah, hold up this midget while I solve this puzzle, or, you know, to lure out, you know, Cromerax, that might feel a little forced. But yeah, the co-op strength just comes from being able to explore that world as this, you know, party that, you know, you don't feel as alone in that desolate world there.
Yeah, I think you can put something in that's like entices people to play co-op without breaking the single player, you know, and I think that's what you want to do, especially in a game like that where, you know, it is meant for co-op.
Yeah.
So, you know, put some stuff in there that, yeah, maybe it is only accessible in co-op, so people will at least give it a shot. And
one thing I didn't even touch in Borderlands 1 was the arena battles.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was their sort of multiplayer-focused thing. And I don't know, yeah, like, I don't know about you guys, but I don't think anyone touched them.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, switch that up.
Yeah.
But
the other news that came out for release this week that was kind of sad was news about Twisted Metal, their online co-op mode. Yeah. Yeah, completely dropped. Completely dropped. And David Jaffe, in some rather confusing tweets of his, clarified it that there's two-player split-screen online, but there's only two-player split-screen campaign. I mean, what he meant by that
local.
Was if you want to go online and play against other people, you and a buddy sitting on the couch can do that from one PlayStation, provided that you guys both have your own PlayStation IDs. But if you want to get online and play through the entire campaign with a friend, that is gone. You can only do that in couch co-op. Yeah, big thumbs down there.
Yeah, I know. I was talking to Andrew about this because he's doing the review, and we're like, yeah, okay, we'll grab it. I'll do the campaign with you. And then he got it today, and we were talking. He's like, oh, just a heads up. Yeah, we can't play the campaign anymore. So that's super disappointing because it was definitely a thing that I was looking forward to. And a lot of it because, you know, Twisted Metal, you blow up cars, but there's a ton of new stuff in this one with the different game modes and different characters, so it would have been cool to explore that with another party.
And the Twisted Metal games to me always, I mean, have had interesting story. Not necessarily like the greatest story of times, but they've always had a really interesting story, particularly back in Twisted Metal 2 and Twisted Metal Black, I think, had some of the more interesting takes on things. And playing through those with a friend made it sort of, you know, that much easier, that much better, because you really wanted to see, all right, just how is this all resolved? So having someone there to kind of help you blow everything up and get through some of those tough points. Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure you weren't too disappointed, though, Locke. You're just like, all right, back to Dark Souls.
Oh, come on. No, back to Shank, because I've got lots of work to do. No, I was looking forward to Twisted Metal. I've been on that train since I played it a while back now. And I really like that franchise. And, you know, it's just, it's too bad that they couldn't include that, because I don't think I can get, you know, my wife's not going to play online or going to play campaign co-op with me. So, oh well.
Oh well.
Another one bites the dust, I guess.
Sadly, yeah. Potentially, some news from last week, there could be another Battlefront game on the horizon. Looks like, based off of some job listings and a bunch of other sort of rumors here and there, that they could be coming out with a Battlefront 3. I'll be honest, I never played any of the Battlefront games, so this was just kind of another news story to me, but I don't know, you guys playing them?
Yeah, I've played the previous ones, and they're definitely pretty addictive, just because there's such a variety of combat options and stuff in it. I seem to remember, like, a rumor or some content, like, a year ago coming out from, like, some Battlefront 3, like, concept art and, like, some video footage and stuff. I'm pretty sure we covered it, because Jim was all about Battlefront.
Yeah. It was.
I remember playing this in university, and, the cool thing about it, Jason, is that you play as the grunt. You are the foot soldier down in the battle, and you start out, and the map is just planets of the galaxy, and you pick which planet you want to go to, and there's a ton of different environments. Like, I forget, probably like...
Well, there's Dagobah, there's Tatooine, there's
Hoth. There's so many different, different areas you can take over. And I remember just, you know, getting with a buddy, and we'd play this, and we'd go through conquer the whole galaxy in a night, and super addictive. So I'd be super curious to see what they can do with, you know, the better online connectivity of this generation, as well as, you know, making it look nice, and just the scale of the battles could really be something. So yeah, definitely interested. And I totally forgot that. I remember those rumors, Nick, about something popping up, but I totally forgot about it. But Star Wars, right? Yeah.
Anything to wash out the bad taste from those first three movies and then the Clone Wars movie? Well, yeah, there's a lot of things.
Yeah, this is one of the better parts of the Star Wars franchise, let me tell you.
So Resident Evil 6 was released, announcement of that being released not too long ago, and looking for some more details, and got a little bit more this week. Apparently, based off the trailer, it is Chris Redfield and Leon Kennedy who are going to be returning, as well as Helena Harper and some guy who's just, you know, going to save the world and kind of a... dusty, reluctant tone. I guess I could do it on a Tuesday because I'm free between 3 and 4 p.m. But looks like this time I called it on the last one, and I said, okay, well, Chris Redfield goes to China now and kills a bunch of people over there. That seems to be the new setting.
Is that really where it is?
It is. Yeah. It's in China.
That's awesome.
So, you know, lots of jokes going to be coming out of that about Chris Redfield continuing his genocide, but, you know.
Chris Redfield is a racist.
I like that they highlighted that, the new control scheme, and that you can move and shoot at the same time as a feature. So
no more tank controls.
Moving and shooting. Thank you, Dead Space.
Oh, man.
No, I'll be honest with you guys. I could care less about Resident Evil 6. I'm waiting for Raccoon City, man. I want to get in on that.
It's looking better and better.
Yeah, like, I remember when you covered it first, it was like, okay, another Resident Evil spinoff. But, you know, lately with the stuff that's been coming out, it's looking tasty, so.
And that's next month, isn't it? March?
Yeah, so like middle of March, March 20th or something. Yeah, so.
And I got to ask too, Nick, for the story there, did you intentionally choose that screen cap to use for the story? Because in the news story itself, it mentions how zombies can run and jump, and we get this nice little screen cap of the dude going like, whoa!
Yeah, hey, I'm jumping.
He's like, I got some ballet moves.
Bad ups for the undead.
You guys have been killing it with the screen cap posts. Like that review of, I think
the Burning Children.
The Burning Children! Wasn't that the best thing, like, on the internet that day? Like, that was so good.
Yeah, happy Action Fun Theater. Fun. Children on fire!
Yeah, exactly. That's where we really shine, is in our you know, picture thumbnails at the top, our header images.
Yeah,
that's right. Speaking of thumbnails and header images, Sanctum 2 has been announced. It's coming out. And, you know, I know the first one, Tally really liked that. She played it. I don't know if, Nick, you played any of that.
I played a little bit of it. You know who actually was really addicted to it on her staff is Mark.
Oh, really?
Put hours and hours and hours into it, yeah.
I own this, but I did not even give it the time of day, to be honest.
It was okay. I mean, it mixes, you know, this is tower defense and FPS stuff. And
okay.
It's got co-op. And it's okay. I think the sequel is going to be one of those ones where the sequel actually is truly better. Or, you know,
okay.
It took the time to kind of incubate their ideas and see what the world does with it, and then
going from proof of concept to something worth looking at.
So.
Right on.
So you're saying Skylander Sanctum 2 and Mark would just be lost to the world?
Yeah, you buy your
We're giving Mark a big head. He had said to me today, he was listening to the last podcast. He's like, you guys mentioned me on two podcasts in a row. You really love me. now it's three in a row. And he's
cutting this part out.
Yeah, no.
Cutting this whole story out.
You know, maybe we should just bring Mark on instead of that guy.
Yeah.
The cat wrangler.
The cat wrangler.
I'm surprised he didn't even just put his cat in front of the camera.
You know, I'm sad that we lost that footage from that particular co-opted cast. That would have been great.
I know.
All right. Anything else from the news you guys saw, want to mention?
I don't think so.
That was a lot.
Moving here.
One quick thing in passing that I saw from Gamasutra today. Apparently, you know, we've been kind of talking about some too. Rayman Origins, fun game. You should check it out. According to Ubisoft, it was profitable for them. So, you know.
Nice.
They've been aggressive with the pricing on it. A lot of price drops here and there. And it might, you know, a lot of times people think that's a retailer-initiated thing, but sometimes it does come from a publisher. So, publisher drops price to spur sales. I think it hovered around $30 to $40 for a good chunk of its life. So.
It's a great price for it, $30 or $40. It's an amazing game.
Yeah.
So, hopefully with that, I mean, they said, you know, since it's something profitable, they could be doing more of those in the future, which
cool.
I think we'd all be happy about.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Sweet.
So, turning to our community and looking at some of our community blogs, you know, one of the things that they've been looking at for the next CCV is anticipated games of 2012. We did our co-opticast two back of what the co-op games of 2012 are. And hearing some from a few of the folks that posted there, one that kind of caught my eye was from Big Bad Bob 113, talking about of Xenomorphs and Men. Of course, yeah, I like that. Of course, referring to Aliens Colonial Marines, which sadly, as we talked about last time, has been delayed. But, you know, a little interesting news post about what he's looking forward to, being a huge fan not only of the publisher, Gearbox, and Borderlands, but also just of those movies, you know, themselves, which I think for myself I can totally agree with. I mean, it was a while until I saw those, but once I did, I was completely hooked and was really sad about the way those things kind of petered out. But, you know, rebooting it. Coming out with the prequel soon. Also in the community blog section, something that we tried to get to last time, just didn't have the chance to, though, but Secret Asian Mans with a Z talking about Bands. How do you keep co-op fresh? And I thought this was, you know, kind of an interesting topic in general to bring up. I mean, he mentioned sort of in the post itself how you play through some games and, you know, you get through the main storyline with a friend, and this is kind of like, okay, so now what? I mean, what else is there? How can things be changed up a bit? And he mentions a few other games then, like Flotilla, an indie game where basically, you know, players have to work at the same time with their actions during a turn. Talked about, you know, things like Portal 2 and Explosion Man to do some of that co-op action puzzle as a way to kind of keep gameplay fresh. But what do you guys think? I mean, what are some good examples you have of co-op games that kept
Portal
you going?
Portal 2 is actually one of the worst examples of keeping co-op fresh, because you play through it once and then
that's it.
You're done.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't play through it again with someone else because you know all the solutions.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, you know, I think in terms of keeping co-op fresh, we talked about Borderlands earlier. It's all about, giving incentives to all the players involved, regardless of whether you beat it or not. And, you know, whether that's weapons, items, loot, customizing your character, any of that kind of stuff keeps people coming back. You look at even, you know, some of the bad examples are like the Fable 2 and Fable 3. Fable 2 especially, where you're basically, just tagging along and you didn't get the stuff, the quest progression back to your character. But the incentive to keep playing with someone was that you did get money from it. So it did have some incentive there for you to go and jump into other games and vice versa. And I think, that's how you keep co-op fresh. I don't think you can change the content so much as you can change what's, I guess, in the content. I don't know. What's the way to say it? Changing the game's core content, but
changing
the player's content.
What I really like is when you can play the actual game, and what I mean by that, in co-op, what I mean by that is The Darkness 2. That just came out. It's a good example I can use. They have this sort of side missions and stuff. Like, that's good and well and all, but I would really like to go through that. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, but, you know, games like Left 4 Dead, which don't exactly have a storyline, work a lot better, whereas The Darkness is story-driven, linear, doesn't, you know, maybe balance issues if you have, like, four dudes with four arms. That's not going to work at all. But one game that came to mind was that we all, I think, tried recently was Syndicate demo, where they almost force you to play co-op, because otherwise you're going to get screwed. And you got to have a bruiser, you got to have a sniper, everyone, you know, you have to have a hacker, medic, and so on and so forth. And it's almost like forcing you into these MMO roles. And I think that's one way of doing it, splitting it up so you just don't have this one, you know, if you're playing single player, you're going to have a hard time. And I think Syndicate, just in the, you know, in its history, is a squad-based game, so of course that is a great way to, you know, split it up and say, okay, you're going to be the psyops guy, you're going to be sniper, we need to do well on this and communicate well. So almost forcing the player to, you know, find people to play with and in order to get past the game. So
well, and I thought what was interesting too about that was, I mean, they while they do put people, you're right, they put people in those kind of roles, they also sort of force you to, everyone has to be a medic. Everyone has to do like some of those basic themes with the team. That's not, you know, it's forcing you out of the usual first person shooter mentality of I just get all the kills and I'll carry the team that way. It's no, you really have to work as a team. You really have to heal your teammates, and you know you can't go it alone. And you're right. I mean, bringing in those kind of MMO sort of qualities to it.
Brink tried to do it a little bit with the sort of quest go help here while other people are doing another thing, but they didn't pull it off all that well, mostly because the multiplayer was a mess anyways, but they tried to do it, and that was kind of, it was the right idea. And I think, you know, being able to reward people for acting, you know, on the, you know, acting on the group mentality in a positive way, you know, whether, so you don't, you know, you're always going to have your lone wolf gunman, and if they want to do their thing, whatever, but rewarding the people who actually want to work together and work because that works better usually in those, you know, those settings, especially when you're shooting dudes, because, yeah, you're going to get shot and taken down. You need to get healed by your buddy. Why not reward the person that does that instead of the guy who charges ahead and takes, yeah, you know, takes out the rest of the team?
Cause absolutely.
What fun is that if one guy's doing all the work up front and the three back are kind of missing out on it?
Yeah. I think it's interesting. I mean, for me, and I haven't played in a while, but Left 4 Dead to me was always a way to keep co-op fresh because of the way they implemented each level. I mean, you knew the basic level design, but because of the whole AI director and they changed, you know, when certain mobs appeared and when they had the hordes, I mean, that was to me, and I've talked about this a couple of different ways, but that was storytelling to me. Like, the story was, what did you and your group of friends do to get out of that situation? And
yeah,
everybody's got a story for that. I mean, like, anybody who's played that game, they've got a story. And I think that was one of the best aspects of that game that, you know, I would love to see more games do, is it really keeps it fresh. Because, yeah, you got this great story of, oh, man, I was with Locke and Nick went down and, you know, I grabbed him by the scruff of the neck and pulled him back up again. And then Locke shot me in the face and that wasn't cool, but we still made it to the end. And I mean, you know, yeah, everyone's got those stories. And then I have a different one entirely for when I go play with a different group of friends. So it never feels the same. So, yeah, something cool to check out and think about of how they keep it fresh. Cool. And obviously, too, you know, we're always looking for other things like that to discuss on these podcasts. So do use those user blogs, put stuff up there about your thoughts and things that you, you know, think, yeah, are interesting and discuss.
Some pretty good user blog posts lately. I've been pretty happy.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, lots of discussion going on there. So good stuff.
Yeah. Everyone keep posting. Thank you.
Yeah. So that kind of takes us into, you know, sort of our more discussion topic. And we got a little bit of a, interesting side note there with Nick talking about indie game development. But what we wanted to kind of bring up this time around actually also came from one of our user blogs. This one comes from Macrocephalus, who talked about how he, well, we'll just say he says he wasn't too smart. The PlayStation Vita edition. And basically goes into a post about how he went to this event to, you know, stand outside, wait in line for a long time to potentially win a free Vita, but then also get some hands-on time with it as well. And so he posted a lot of his impressions about it and, you know, some of what he's thinking for how the touchscreen on the back sort of works in casual gaming. Pretty long sort of post from some thoughts there that is worth reading, but Nick, I know you've been fortunate enough to get your hands on one, and I think minutes before the podcast went live, it finally stopped updating, so that maybe you got 2 seconds worth of gaming in, but I'm going to turn this over to you.
All right, so let's see. What can we talk about that? You know, we could do, this would be cool.
Let's just, whoa, let's see the damn thing.
Hold on, let's do this. So.
Let's all just grab.
Let's see how well this comes into focus. Trying, maybe.
That works.
Can you guys see it alright?
Yeah. Yeah,
Dungeon right. Dungeon Hunter Alliance loading.
So it's installing that now, so I had downloaded that. So yeah, so a big thing about this, all the, you know, all the titles are going to be available portable or in stores and online. So I just picked up Dungeon Hunter Alliance and we got some Lumina's action going on. So here's the first thing I don't like. You can't use the pass and navigate this interface. You have to use the touch screen.
Oh, boo.
Which is kind of annoying. But but let's talk about specific co-op things and like why this has potential for co-op. And I'll show you this little thing here called Near. And Near is basically Sony's answer to Foursquare. It's Foursquare for gaming. And basically what you can do is you can find people near you and see what they're doing and potentially meet up and game together and stuff. So
how near?
Well, watch, I'll show you. So
okay.
You just tap this button to check in. I've already checked in at home, there's kind of no point, but you kind of click this discoveries thing. And it says, let's see who we found by me. There's one person it found actually that has this, so hold on, let me see if I can figure out how to bring this up again.
Out and about.
Out and about.
All right. So It found someone else that's played. I had played Hotshots Golf, so it actually found someone else that played Hotshots Golf. And so it's saying, all right, here it is. So this person is in Stockertown, which is about 2 miles away from me. You can see it actually kind of. It's showing you a little radius thing.
This is kind of creepy.
Yeah, I was going to say, Nick, I'm a little bit creeped out by this right now. Here's this person. Zoom in, and this is them playing right now.
Obviously, all this stuff is optional. You know, you can just list it, just be your friends, or you know, approve people to see. I figured I'd keep it open now because not a lot of people are going to have this. And
yeah.
But you can kind of see what else they have, you know, their play history, and you know, so you kind of have the potential to meet up and get more co-op stuff going. You know, when more stuff comes out that does support co-op play, I think you know this is kind of in its infancy here, but there's definitely some potential.
Okay.
So, but the big thing, you know, along with that is you can kind of see what I just did there. Tap the home button. Is everything stays running for you. So here's the PlayStation Store I was looking at. Here's a list of kind of things that were going on. This is like, if you have an Android phone, like the task.
I'm sorry.
Wait a sec.
There's a trophy you have there that you need to explain.
What's that?
The trophy there, you need to explain.
Oh, you like that. Okay, so this is from Uncharted. And if you play with the back panel on it, it gives you a little bit of this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
It gives you the Touch My Rear trophy.
I thought that was a trophy for that Nier game you just had.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, you want to meet up? Because I need this trophy. Because called Touch My Rear.
There you go. I don't know. It's kind of tough to tell if it's focused or not, but
that's cool.
Excuse me. The trophies are separate. You can see at the top here it has PlayStation Network and Vita. So it seems like all the games are going to support trophies as well.
Nice.
Some pretty cool stuff so far. This is kind of the task manager. You can kind of see everything that's running. You can jump between stuff.
And now, do you jump? Is like each different screen something like at the top there? Those icons, is that sort of the main things that are running? Those little bubbles? Okay.
So you can see this up here in the middle is kind of what's running right now. So I actually got quite a bit of stuff going on.
I was
going
to say, it looked like it just paused where you're at there in Uncharted, and you just brought it up and started playing again.
And so you can close the stuff by doing this little like page peel thing, and close your active thing.
That's cool.
But yeah, it pauses, and it's pretty... Sorry.
Whoa.
It's pretty quick, and it... The screen is gorgeous. I mean, I know this, you know, grainy internet feed doesn't do it justice, but
no.
It's definitely PlayStation 3 quality graphics in a handheld.
That is the most beautiful grainy quality screen I've ever seen.
So when does the Dark Souls title hit that?
You don't need any more.
I think, you know, in terms of whether, you know, how viable this will be as a co-op platform, I think the couple things that they did in terms of you're always connected, you know, you always have access to your friends list and what's going on, kind of a thing, I think that's really going to help, and having more games support online co-op and stuff should really help it.
Does it allow connectivity between, so Dungeon Hunter Alliance, if I hop on my PS3 and you're on your Vita, can we play together?
I don't know if that one does. Wipeout for this, you can play multiplayer with the people on the PSN version of Wipeout. I do know that. There is that Warriors Lair game that's coming out that's going to have the cross-platform play support. You know, it kind of surprises me that handhelds don't have more co-op, because they're kind of almost... You play them mostly in social settings, right? You're on a bus or a train or on a plane. Like, you're usually... You know, in a place where
you're the opposite of your couch.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's gaming on the go, so there's other people around you more times than not. So the incentive would be to play something together somehow. Or you know, so I think that Nier thing's a good start. You know, maybe it breaks the ice a little bit.
That's cool. Definitely potential is there.
Yeah, and so this is, you know, this is the Wi-Fi and the 3G model, and it seems to kind of switch between them pretty seamlessly. So, you know, you can get those notifications constantly, and you know, you are always on and connected and
nice,
ready to go. So,
cool.
But yeah, I've only had like an hour really to kind of play with it, and you know, see what's going on there, but it's got some potential for sure.
Cool.
Looks slick.
So definitely more to expect from that, I'm sure.
Yeah, so we'll have the full review of that up at the on the official launch, the other official launch, which is 22nd, next Thursday, Wednesday.
Something like that. Sweet.
Yeah. So.
Very cool.
Nice.
Well, gentlemen, as always, it's been a pleasure. And as a reminder to all of our listeners out there, of course, we got the Windows Phone 7 app out there for CoOptimus, where you can pick up, check out the site through there. The Android app as well. The iPhone app is...
It's coming. It really is. I actually don't have it next to me, but I got the test build. We're getting very, very close. The guy that's working on actually said probably within a week or two.
Wow. Okay.
By the time the next CoOpticast rolls out, hopefully.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
That'd be sweet.
Of course, we got shirts up on Split Reason. Check them out there. As you heard from the last one, we're all out of one of them. But
Revolution.
Yeah.
Yes.
The CoOptimus Revolution. Leave feedback for us on iTunes. Follow us, of course, on Twitter. At CoOptimus is our account. And, you know, shoot us... line through there, through the forums, or leave a voicemail, 646-926-6748. Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure, and so join me as always. Above me, I have...
Nobody.
Locke.
No, that's me.
Locke is above
me. I'm here.
Me.
Hi.
Hi.
Touch my rear.
Yes. To my left, I have the indomitable... That's you.
No, me. Hi.
You're over there.
I'm somewhere. Nick. This is so confusing.
I'll make it work.
Nick Paleo. And then, of course, unfortunately, not here this week, that guy. Mike Katzafrakis.
Unfortunately.
Whichever way you want to take it. All right, folks. Take care. Have a great week. This is CoOpticast.
Play nice together.